You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
J.R.R. Tolkien's Flight to the Ford isn't just a walk through the dark woods. It's a masterclass in how he weaves two tales across time, linking Bilbo's lighthearted adventure to Frodo's perilous quest with chilling precision. This is part two of four, exploring the chapter Flight to the Ford from J.R.R. Tolkien's Fellowship of the Ring.
I'm Aaron, your host and guide to wandering Middle-earth, especially for first-time readers of Tolkien's works. Visit ringspodcast.com to find my free downloadable guides for reading The Silmarillion and other works by J.R.R. Tolkien. Now, let's wander.
The landscape tells a story long before the characters ever speak. In this portion of Flight to the Ford, Tolkien uses the land itself, the rocks, the hills, the rain, to echo the inner turmoil and danger that Frodo and the others feel. The road eastward from Bree, as described in these pages, seems to press in on them. It's more than just gloomy weather. The country itself feels malevolent. Quote, "This new country seemed threatening and unfriendly." That's a line that may not leap off the page at first, but when you read it slowly, when you picture Frodo, already weakened and wounded, drenched to the bone, trudging through a rain-soaked wilderness with ringwraiths behind him, it strikes a different chord. The hills begin to, quote, shut them in. The rain starts falling in, quote, fine drenching sheets. And their camp is, quote, cheerless. It's as though the land is actively working against them. Tolkien is doing what he does best here, making the external world reflect the internal experience. This is no cozy woodland trail with cheerful song. This is a landscape haunted by memory, soaked in shadow, and it reinforces that this journey is no simple errand. It is a burdened passage through a place that resists their very presence. But let's zoom out for a second. What Tolkien is doing in this part of the chapter is playing with echoes, reminders, of Bilbo's earlier journey. And if we pick up on these clues, we begin to notice how The Lord of the Rings isn't just a new story in Middle-earth, it's an intentional response to The Hobbit. In fact, you can start to see Frodo's journey as a kind of shadow version of Bilbo's, where the road is darker, the stakes are higher, and the echoes of the past are tinged with sorrow. There's this moment where Frodo sees, quote, ancient walls of stone and the ruins of towers. They had an ominous look. That line, it calls back directly to The Hobbit, to that part in the chapter Roast Mutton, when Bilbo sees the dark hills ahead, quote, dreary hills, rising higher and higher, dark with trees. On some of them were old castles, with an evil look, as if they had been built by wicked people. That is not a coincidence. Tolkien is threading the past into the present, inviting the attentive reader, like you, my fellow wanderer, to remember the journey that came before. But he doesn't stop with the visual echo. The weather echoes too. Back in The Hobbit, Bilbo and the dwarves are caught in a spring rainstorm as they approach the land of the trolls. And here again, as Frodo and company pass over the last bridge and deeper into the wild, quote, "The wind began to blow steadily out of the west and pour the water of the distant seas on the dark heads of the hills in fine drenching rain." Same landscape, same rain, but a different feeling entirely. Where Bilbo's rainstorm was more of a narrative inconvenience, a way to push the characters to the light of the troll's fire, Frodo's rain is a shroud, an obscuring and oppressive mist, we might even say a symbolic drowning. And this isn't just clever world-building, it really is symbolic. Bilbo's journey was about finding courage, luck, and treasure. Frodo's is about resisting evil, carrying a burden, and surviving the slow erosion of corruption from the ring. So while the lands may look the same, and the rain may fall in the same rhythm, the emotional weight behind them is vastly different. Tolkien is telling us, without ever having to spell it out, that Frodo's road is no repeat of Bilbo's. It is a reckoning with what came before, and what must now be faced again, but in deeper shadow. Strider offers another thread in this tapestry of memory. As they travel, he shares tales of the evil realm of Angmar, the Witch King's dominion in the north, and the battles that were fought there against the ancient kingdom of Arnor. This land, he says, still lies under a shadow, and that's not just a bit of backstory for flavor, it's part of the world's memory, a living history that still pulses under the surface of the land. It's no accident that Strider is the one telling these stories. He's not just some wilderness guide with a good sword arm. He is the heir of Elendil, a descendant of the kings of old. And as he says, quote, "The heirs of Elendil do not forget all things past." I love that line. Because, in a way, Tolkien is talking to us too. You and I, like the heirs of Elendil, remember these stories. We see the connections. We understand that what happened in the past shapes what's happening now. And if your memory needs a little jog, I've got you covered. Head over to ringspodcast.com/flight for the chapter guide for this chapter. There are links there to earlier episodes that dive into the stories of Arnor and Angmar and those castles that look like they were built by wicked hands. And as Frodo continues his journey into deeper shadow, the boundary between the seen and the unseen continues to blur. Remember, he's carrying a wound from the Morgul Blade. He's 10 days from Rivendell. He's soaked, weary, and slipping. And that's when Tolkien gives us another one of Frodo's strange dreams. In this dream, Frodo is back in the Shire, safe, warm, and surrounded by comfort. But not all is well. Tall black shadows stand looking over the hedge, watching, waiting. The contrast is stark. The Shire, that bastion of peace and simplicity, is no longer safe. Evil shadows lurk around the edges, even in Frodo's dream, even in his mind. It's a haunting image, and it reveals Frodo's state with uncanny precision. He has one foot in both worlds now, the green, peaceful world of the Shire, and the cold, shadowed world of the Ring. He is beginning to fade. The Ringwraiths don't just haunt his steps, they haunt his mind. The safe place he's trying to protect is already being invaded by the darkness he carries. And this brings us full circle, back to the emotional weight that Tolkien weaves into this passage. Yes, it's about geography and ancient battles and rain-soaked hills, but it's also about the burden of memory, the persistence of shadow. The way the past creeps into the present and the world grows darker, not all at once, but gradually, with each ruined tower, each cheerless camp, each dream where the shadows cross the threshold. If you are enjoying this wandering of Middle-earth, and you think a friend might wander these wildlands with us, share this episode with them. Let them step into this moment of Middle-earth with you, because these stories are meant to be remembered, and they're meant to be shared. The road through the wilderness doesn't just wind through Middle-earth, it winds through memory, shadow, and the uncertain borderlands between hope and despair. And in this next stretch of Flight to the Ford, Tolkien continues layering these themes with subtle brilliance. The landscape still broods, Frodo is still fading, and Strider, ever the guide, is doing everything in his power to hold both the company and their courage together. In the cold gray morning after the storm, Strider delivers some unfortunate news. They veered too far and now they're nearing, quote, troll country. Which, yeah, not exactly the route you want to take when you're shepherding four half-sized travelers and the ringbearer who's slowly turning into a wraith. But what makes this moment more than just a navigation hiccup is that it's clue number two, another breadcrumb in the path leading us towards something significant that's going to happen later in this chapter. Troll country. Again, Tolkien is echoing The Hobbit, but he's not just repeating himself, he's building suspense, foreshadowing, and creating a sense that the old paths are being walked again, but under a darker sky. As they continue, we get a scene that's now become familiar in tone. Frodo's condition worsens, his left arm is lifeless, and he feels as though, quote, icy claws are digging into his shoulder. This is no ordinary wound. It's a Morgul wound, the kind that doesn't just cut the flesh, but seeps into the soul. And Tolkien returns to one of his most powerful symbolic tools, cold. Evil in Middle-earth is often felt as a chill, a frost, a death of warmth. It's not always fire and brimstone, it's something slower, more insidious. Think of the Borrowdowns. Think of the chill that follows the Black Riders. Even the memory of the Witch King carries a northern cold. And now that same cold is working its way through Frodo's body. But it's not just Frodo that suffers. Nature suffers with him. Tolkien once again blurs the line between landscape and emotion. Frodo looks around and, quote, the trees and rocks about him seemed shadowy and dim. It's as if the land itself is falling under the same spell that grips him. This is something Tolkien does masterfully and often. He makes you feel the mood by the way the world around the characters is reacting. And so we get another reminder that Middle-earth is alive in a deeply spiritual sense. And then, a small moment that says a lot. Sam is downcast, and Strider, without flourish, says, quote, but do not give up hope, Sam. Simple. Not grandiose, no inspiring speech, but in a world where shadows have claws and the road is bent toward despair, that quiet reassurance carries the weight of kingship. It's a hint at the kind of leader Strider is, one who doesn't just fight evil with his sword, but pushes back the darkness with steady words and faithful presence. He knows what hopelessness feels like, and he names the alternative. Don't give up hope. That line almost floats past you on first read, but pause on it, and it will feel like a small candle in the vast darkness of night. And then, as Frodo sleeps again, we get another dream. These dream sequences aren't just narrative pauses, they're psychological windows, and this one is eerie. Frodo dreams of, quote, dark wings circling above him, carrying pursuers who search every hollow and hill for him. There's something prophetic about this. Up until now, Frodo has only encountered the Black Riders on horseback. But here, in a dream, they're in the air. They're no longer bound to the road. Their reach is extending. It's a terrifying image, and if you've read ahead or seen the films, then you know what's coming. The Nazgul take to the skies on winged creatures. And somehow, Frodo knows it too. It makes you wonder, what kind of connection is developing between him and these ancient deathless hunters? Is this dream merely a forewarning, or is it something deeper, a bleed-over from the Wraith world into his own? That's the horror of the ring. It doesn't just sit on your finger, it draws you closer to the unseen, and once you're partially there, the barriers begin to slip. Time, space, perception, they all get a little fuzzy. So Frodo isn't just dreaming of what might come. He's seeing things that may already be real, in another layer of reality. I find that pretty chilling. But then, light. The next morning, Strider returns with good news. They're back on track. And as he shares that sliver of optimism, quote, the sun had risen and was shining brightly. The text tells us that, quote, the spirits of the party rose again. Even Frodo felt better in the morning light. There it is again, light as a balm, a recurring theme in Tolkien's world. Morning brings clarity. Sunlight, especially after darkness, acts almost like medicine in Middle-earth. It lifts the gloom and pushes back the shadows. And yet, not everything is healed. The scene ends with a reminder, quote, a mist seems to obscure his sight. Frodo, even in the sun, is not whole. He's been touched by the enemy. Not just physically, but spiritually. And the mists he sees are not just literal. They're metaphors for his deepening journey into the shadow world. Even in the light, he is not safe. Even in the warmth, the cold lingers. Tolkien rarely lets us rest for long. He gives us a breath, but not full relief. And that's part of what makes this journey so real. The moments of hope are genuine, but they don't erase the cost. They simply make the burden more bearable for a time. So as the company moves forward, out of storm, out of shadow, and back onto the correct path, they do so with a little more hope.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQBar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQBars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQBar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQBar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQBar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQBar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
And now we arrive at a scene that at first glance might seem like a bit of lighthearted nostalgia, a callback, a moment of comic relief. But as always with Tolkien, there's more going on beneath the surface. The company, worn down by days of cold rain, injury, and anxiety, suddenly finds themselves on a path made by, quote, strong arms and heavy feet. That phrase alone already hints at something other than the small feet of hobbits or the quiet tread of rangers. They follow this path until it brings them to a stony wall with a great door hanging ajar on one hinge. And what do they find inside? Old bones, empty jars, broken pots. It's the literal echo chamber of an older story. This is the remnants of the Troll's Den from The Hobbit, Bilbo's first real confrontation with danger, the place where courage and cleverness first began to shape him. And now Frodo is walking through that same space. But the mood is different, isn't it? In The Hobbit, it was a place of firelight and humor, of bungling trolls and quick-witted wizards. Here, it's cold, silent, abandoned. The humor comes, but not right away. Before we get to that, we pause for a character beat that I just love. Pippin is still very much the Took trying to prove himself. Tolkien notes that Pippin, quote, not liking to show Strider that he was still afraid, went on ahead. Back in a previous chapter, Tolkien told us that Pippin was, quote, trying to show that he was tougher than he looked or felt. That theme carries forward. Pippin's courage is real, but it's also performative, and in that way, I think he's very relatable. Aren't we all sometimes just trying to act braver than we are? Fake it till you make it and whatnot? Especially in front of someone like Strider, who seems to have walked out of legend with a sword and a shadowed past. Anyway, Pippin goes ahead and comes running back, exclaiming that he's found trolls, real ones. You can hear the panic in his voice. Here, Tolkien brings in a recurring motif in this scene. Quote, the sun was now high. In fact, he's told us that 3 times in less than 2 pages. So why so much focus on the sun? Because of what happens next. Strider leads the hobbits to the clearing, and there they are, the trolls, 3 of them. Just as from Bilbo's story. But this time, they're stone. Still. Frozen in place. Strider, with a dry sense of humor, hits one with a stick and even yells at them to move. The hobbits flinch, but the trolls do not stir. That's when Frodo really remembers. These are the trolls. The ones who tried to eat Bilbo and the dwarves. The ones Gandalf tricked into arguing until the sun rose. Frodo sees them, quote, one stooping, and the other 2 stood staring at him. It's almost identical to how they are described in The Hobbit. William, Bert, and Tom, frozen mid-argument, as if time itself held its breath. Quote, William never spoke, for he stood turned to stone as he stooped, and Bert and Tom were stuck like rocks as they looked at him. And then Tolkien adds another delightful detail. One of the trolls has, quote, an old bird's nest behind his ear. A detail that not only confirms their petrified state, but makes good on an earlier line from The Hobbit. where Tolkien claimed they, quote, stand there to this day, all alone, unless the birds perch on them. Now a bird has built a nest behind one of their ears. How's that for continuity? But what really drives home the wonder of this moment is Pippin's reaction. He had, quote, never more than half believed Bilbo's story. And now he's standing in the proof of it. The tales of the old hobbit weren't just bedtime stories, they were real. And for the younger hobbits, who have grown up hearing Bilbo's adventures retold in cozy parlors of the Shire, this is a moment where fiction becomes fact, where the world becomes larger, more mysterious, and more interconnected than they thought. Let's step back and look at the broader structure here, because this moment isn't just about trolls. It's about storytelling, about legacy. Frodo and company are walking in the footsteps of Bilbo, but the path is not exactly the same. And Tolkien is deliberate in how he sets up both the parallels and the contrasts. First, the similarities. In both stories, the weather is miserable, rain dumping from the sky, fires impossible to light. Both Bilbo and Frodo see a towers on the hills. Both wander into lands shadowed by Angmar, that long-dead northern kingdom of evil. The geography and the atmosphere echo each other. But then the differences begin to emerge. Bilbo comes up from the road to find the trolls. Frodo and his group, having strayed too far north, are coming down toward them. Bilbo first finds the trolls, then discovers their hoard. Frodo reverses that sequence. He finds the hoard first, and only then the stone statues. Bilbo's confrontation was in the night, Frodo's is in the brightness of day. Bilbo's journey had its dangers, but it was a tale of discovery, of learning how to be brave. Frodo's journey, though it echoes the earlier one, is heavier and darker. He's already wounded by a Morgul blade. He's already being hunted by shadows with wings. He's not discovering danger. He's carrying it. Even the symbolism of the weapons shifts. Bilbo found Sting in the troll's cave, his first true blade. Frodo already carries a Varro blade, gifted in a tomb among the dead, after defeating an ancient evil. Bilbo had to unlock the cave door with a found key. Frodo finds it open, emptied of threat perhaps, but also stripped of mystery. And then the ring. Bilbo was on his way to find it. Frodo already has it. And its weight is with him always. His journey is not merely a fun adventure, but a necessary one. A mission tied to the fate of the world. And yet, despite all these contrasts, Frodo finds hope here. Quote, the reminder of Bilbo's first successful adventure was heartening. Bilbo went there and back again. Maybe Frodo can too. This moment becomes a reminder that courage is not a new thing, that others have walked this road before and survived. That's one of Tolkien's great gifts. He never lets the past sit idle. It echoes forward. It resurfaces. It offers both warning and encouragement. The trolls aren't just a callback for the reader. They are a signal to Frodo, as if telling him, you are not the first to face fear. Others have stood where you now stand. Others have triumphed, and maybe you can too.
Thank you to this episode's executive producer, The Old One. If you would like to support the Lore of the Rings podcast, visit ringspodcast.com/member. If you found today's Wandering of Middle-earth to be inspiring, please share this episode with a friend. Lastly, if you would like to connect with me, I am most active on Threads. Find a link to my profile at ringspodcast.com and tap the at symbol near the top. And thank you for wandering Middle-earth with me today.
Stuck in a job you hate? Wish you could break into tech, but don't know where to start? CBG Nuggets makes IT training simple, affordable, and dare we say, fun. With short, engaging videos and hands-on virtual labs, you can build real-world skills right from your browser. No expensive hardware, no confusing software. Just practical training that gets you job ready. Learn at your own pace, on your own schedule, from anywhere. Start your 7-day free trial at cbtnuggets.com. Because a better career is just a few clicks away.
Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your six.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear three full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.